Thank you for downloading this podcast from policyreview.tv.
Firstly, my apologies for not being able to join you today. I'm keen to tell you about the work that we've got underway to improve fostering and about our plans for the next phase. As many of you will know, fostering and improving the life chances of children in care are matters that are very close to my heart. They're the reason I spent a decade working in the care system as a family barrister, why I came into politics and why I'm proud to be the Minister for Children. I've shared my home with over 80 foster children over the years, and I won't pretend it was always easy. Children in care face tremendous challenges, not least finding themselves in the home of strangers who often have very different ways of living and, in some cases, children of their own. I've seen firsthand the tremendous challenges children in care face, but I've also seen the tremendous potential there is for foster carers to help children turn their lives around. Many of the children we welcomed into our home came from troubled backgrounds, but they gradually settled in and began to feel at home, thriving on routine, stability and love. In short, enjoying a normal childhood where they were treated just like me and my siblings. That's what I want, and what I know you want for every child, whatever their start in life. It's the reason we're acting with some urgency to overhaul all aspects of the care system. There's work underway to raise the quality of children's homes and reform the adoption system, and introducing junior ISAs and launching the Care Leavers Charter, which I hope you'll embrace with the same enthusiasm as you did the Foster Carers Charter. But there's still much to do. We know the number of children in care is rising, and that 3/4 of them are fostered. Children in care come from many different backgrounds and cultures, and so we must reach out to a wide range of people and encourage them to come forward to foster. People who may have thought fostering was not for them, but who may have the right skills and motivations. We hope to learn more about what motivates people to foster from a market research exercise that reports early next year. We must ensure we're not putting unnecessary barriers in the way of people who could offer a child a loving, stable family home. For example, it's simply not true that people who work can't foster. They can and do. Clearly, there will be children whose needs are so great that they require full-time carers, but for some children, being part of a family where at least one member of the family goes out to work provides the child with an important role model. So, we're encouraging employers to adopt flexible working policies designed specifically for foster carers. Tesco and O2 have already done this, and we hope others will follow in their footsteps. The department is introducing a policy for its own employees and will urge others to do likewise. I also encourage fostering services consider delivering support and training outside of the traditional 9-to-5. Instead of blanket bans, we should ask whether people can provide a safe, loving home where a child can experience a stable, happy family life. We should ask whether they're equipped to support the child's education, whether they're resilient enough to care for children that may have very challenging needs. I want to ensure that the foster carers already in the system are better supported, that they have access to the training they need to provide good quality care, and they are valued and respected as a core member of the team, and that they're able to make day-to-day decisions for the children they care for. I recognise one of the biggest frustrations foster carers face is the pointless red tape that stops them getting on with everyday parenting. They know the child better than most people. They're trusted to provide a safe home, but aren't allowed to decide whether a child can go to a sleepover. This means that already disadvantaged children miss out on essential childhood experiences that their peers take for granted. Why? Because of the bureaucracy that benefits no one. Not the child, not the carer, and not the social workers, who have many other pressing matters to deal with. Too often I hear that children have missed out on a school trip because their social worker hasn't had the time to carry out a risk assessment and sign the form. Schools carry out risk assessments for school trips, and in the vast majority of cases, these are decisions that a foster carer can and should make. Now, I recognise that there are other issues at play here. I know that in some cases, securing parents' agreement to delegation can be difficult. It's understandable that they may be reluctant to let go when their child has just come into care. This is where good social work comes in, working with parents to build trust and help them understand the benefits for their child of delegating day-to-day decision-making. This may take time, which is one reason why it's so important to keep delegation under regular review. In many cases, though, the failure to delegate is a cultural issue. I understand that staff worry something could go wrong and become painfully risk-averse. But we must think of the children. How can already vulnerable children have any sense of normality when they're constantly treated differently from other children? The truth is that nobody can completely eliminate risk. Wrapping children in cotton wool doesn't help them. It denies them the opportunity to learn and grow as other children do. I heard recently about a little boy who'd enjoyed going to kickboxing as a positive outlet for his anger issues until it was banned for being too risky. So, I encourage local leaders and managers to empower and reassure their social workers, to encourage them to work with birth families, foster carers and children to make sure foster carers are given the authority to make these day-to-day decisions that matter so much to children. We've recently consulted on proposals to improve practice in this area, working closely with the sector, including foster carers, and thanks to those of you that have responded. The consultation results will be available early next year. Our main aim for foster children, indeed for all looked after children, is to treat them as we would our own children, for everyone involved in their care to have high aspirations for them. And this is especially important in education, where there is a glaring gap between looked after children and their peers. In 2011, only 12% of children in care got 5 good GCSEs, including English and maths, compared to 53% of all children. There's no doubt that looked after children who've often had a troubled start in life find it harder to achieve in education. But some do succeed at school, so the challenges are not insurmountable. We know, for example, that one of the determining factors is placement stability. The fewer the placements, the better the results. I recently led a cross-party inquiry into the educational attainment of children in care. Making the education of children a higher priority for foster carers was one of the key recommendations in our final report. A foster carer's support and guidance can make all the difference. So, we're supporting carers with this in a number of ways, by developing improved materials to help those who train foster carers through the department's work with virtual school heads, by giving priority to looked after children in school admissions, through the extra resources schools can draw on via the pupil premium. Foster parents want the children they care for to do well at school, to go on to further study, to get a good job, and to have a fulfilling personal life. I know my parents wanted these things as much for the children we fostered as they did for me and my siblings. We mustn't forget, though, that there are many children who've benefited from an enriching, life-changing experience in care and gone on to achieve great things. There's so much valuable expertise in the sector and so many hard-working individuals who are making a real difference. We should do more to celebrate and spread such good practice. Last month, I launched the Fostering Information Exchange. This is a secure online platform on the Local Government Association's Knowledge Hub. It's been developed with the sector in response to demand from the sector. I encourage you to use it to share learning, explore ideas and make contact with each other. In the coming months, we will consider arrangements for long-term fostering, returning children home from care, and how allegations against foster families might be better handled. I'm aware, from years of living with foster children, that you do the most incredibly demanding and rewarding job. I'm aware too that there are few things more challenging than trying to meet the needs of children in care, and few things more inspiring and seeing them progress and succeed. We often talk about the odds being stacked against these, the most vulnerable children in our society. I want to work with you to tip the balance back in their favour. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from policyreview.tv. For more details, go to www.policyreview.tv. Please note that this audio is subject to copyright and cannot be used by other broadcasters or for commercial gain.